And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter, Monday morning, March 4th. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Kyle, we've had everyone took their stab at the bear trap. We had swirling winds. We talked going into the tournament about how it is one of the events that does end up being one of the toughest. We don't see 22 under win, but we did see some birdies. We had a fantastic leaderboard, and you might know him as Kevin Mitchell if you watch the broadcast, but it's Keith Mitchell. who comes out of nowhere, 15.5-foot birdie putt to win the tournament. He bests Ricky Fowler, and we'll get into both of the superstars here, I'm sure, in a little bit. Ricky Fowler made a good charge on Sunday. Brooks Koepka made a charge on Sunday. Lucas Glover made a charge on Sunday. And Ryan Palmer started it all by dropping a 63 early in the day. How are you feeling after a very, very eventful Sunday at the Honda?
Well, it was eventful, and I think you go into weeks like Torrey and Riviera and Mexico, and you're like, okay, well, we're going to get some storylines. I don't know what they're going to be, but there's no way we're not going to get storylines. And then you go into Honda, and you're like, okay, three of the top 10, six of the top 25. I guess we might get some storylines. And then it's as if you got every single high profile storyline that there was. Like how many different things could come out of Honda that would be interesting? I don't know what the number was, but you got all of them.
No, your storyline hit rate was much higher here than it has been at any of the high profile tournaments that we had on the California swing.
Totally. And you got JT in the USGA, you got Ricky closing, you got Koepka, you know, the new voice Koepka playing great. You got kind of a feel good winner. You got Vijay Singh content. I mean, it was a really kind of a fun weekend for what I think a lot of people thought would be the quote unquote kind of break in this 4 or 5 week stretch of just a ton of golf.
And yeah, forgive me for not mentioning the great Vijay Singh, who made his held the 54 hole lead. 36-hole lead?
He was one back, I think, going into Sunday. I can't remember if he was leading after two rounds. He was basically right there the last three rounds. He kind of took over after Ernie Els was within two on Thursday, which Thursday feels like it was a month ago. But yeah, he played great. It's crazy. I think that my takeaway from Vijay, and Shane Bacon was talking about this a little bit, he's got 34 PGA Tour wins, and I think that's easy to forget. And I kind of compared it to, you know, the other four kind of high-profile names that were on top of the leaderboard, and Koepka, Fowler, Sergio, and JT. Those guys have, I think I said 29 combined, and those are some, you know, Sergio's had a pretty full career, and JT's obviously, you know, those other three guys are a little younger, but they've played a lot more events, so I think what Vijay did over the course of his career, I think he goes a little bit unnoticed and maybe underappreciated.
Maybe so. I think that I don't know if history or golf fans will necessarily hang their hat on this, but as I've continued to study the game and you know, try to take my fan experience from a lifetime of playing and loving the game to learning more about it, hosting this podcast, helping out at CBSSports.com, and the time where the fact that Vijay Singh was the player that disrupted the long Tiger Woods streak of being number one player in the world holds some significance to me, just because of in this long era of dominance, he had set the bar so high, no one else in the game of golf was going to be able to get up there and reach his level. And there were some, you know, some of that's going to be on Tiger Woods himself, but isn't it in like the... It's around the mid-2000s, right? 2004, 2006. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
We had a long conversation here on the podcast about, you know, being number one in the world and how insane it's been that Tiger's been the number one player so many more weeks than anyone else. And so because Vijay Singh was able to disrupt Tiger at the height of his powers, that to me is sort of the place where I always hang him, along with being, you know, a major championship winner, along with, as you mentioned, just a stupid number of PGA Tour wins, that in an era when it felt like no one else could chase the greatest golfer of all time, Vijay Singh got him, at least for a couple of weeks. And so I think that to me will always be the thing that I carry in conversations when we're talking about Vijay Singh moving forward.
Yeah, totally. And I think some people look at VJ and they're like, oh, well, he did it in this different era. It was easier and whatever. And it's like, well, if you're saying that about VJ, you also have to apply it to Tiger. And right. I think there is some validity to that. I don't think it was as competitive in 2003 as it is in 2019. And we don't need to go back over that. We talked about it 100 times. But I just, 34 PGA Tour wins, man, that's, I mean, is Justin Thomas going to get there? Is DJ going to get there? Spieth? Rory? I mean, that's a lot of wins in any era. And I don't know. It was kind of cool. I thought it was hilarious. I saw Chris Solomon tweeted about this, but I noticed it throughout the day on Sunday. People were like legitimately rooting for Vijay Singh. Like in a real PGA Tour event. It was crazy. Like people have historically not liked him, and people were kind of into it just because of his age and just the kind of the unique nature of somebody that old winning potentially winning a PGA Tour event.
I will argue that is applicable across all sports. In golf, I think that we've seen it with Sergio Garcia recently, where the longtime villain has all of a sudden taken on this fan favorite personality. But I think that if you are able to stick around for long enough, even if you were sort of the villain character within the, you know, WWE-ification of all sports, but you know, in the narratives and as the player in the sport, if you are a villain, if you stick around long enough, by the time you're going around and doing your farewell tour, everyone's doing a thank you Kobe, thank you D-Wade video montage in every visiting arena. Doesn't matter, you know, who you are or how many times you ripped out that team's heart. There is something about longevity that I think is appreciated across all sports.
And I think people like to be in on like, oh, I know who VJ is. Like, that's how big of a golf fan I am. Like,
oh, really?
I remember when VJ was winning majors, stuff like that.
So what? So it's never going to get better than Bruce Springsteen either? You new guys with your rock and roll. You don't understand exactly what real rock and roll is.
Seriously, though, people are like, oh, well, I remember. And I think that, like, I don't know. Why are we talking about Vijay Singh when Brooks Koepka and Fowler and JT were all prominently involved this weekend?
Because it's fun. And because we're here about the fun. Vijay Singh had a moment. All right, so I put this on my notes. Do you think Vijay Singh will win another PGA Tour event? Do you think he will get one more? No.
No.
Okay. No. Do you think that he's going to challenge Bernard Langer for King of the Champions Tour?
No.
Ooh. Is that because of Langer's dominance?
Yeah. Vijay's what, 56? Langer's 60?
Vijay said this week that the success at Honda is not going to make him change his plans. He has been in a slow transition to going from the PGA Tour to the Champions Tour, and pretty much all the way transitioned over to the Champions Tour at this point.
He does have that kind of psychopathic like desire to compete and win in the same way I think Langer does, but I don't know. I mean, and I don't totally remember the transition for Langer from the PGA Tour to the European Tour to the PGA, whatever we're calling it, the Senior Tour. But it hasn't been. I mean, how many Champions Tour wins does Vijay have? A couple?
Yeah, I think so.
I just don't feel like it's been as maybe smooth as Longer's transition.
All right, let's get on to the golfers that are under the age. I mean, forget under the age of 50, under the age of 40, under the age of 30. Well, I guess Ricky Fowler is 30 years old now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we saw something really, something that I think was exciting for fans of Ricky Fowler. And it's him totally, totally mocking the drop process.
It was unbelievable.
So this is JT part of Jupe Life too?
Yeah, they're both Jupe Life.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
I think that all of the hometown boys coming out and causing and just feeling really comfortable. Ricky Fowler makes the Sunday charge in a way, like, we've got a colleague who always tries to say that things are typical, and like, if Ricky is typical, then he's going to be messing up. So I wrote this down. This was an atypical Ricky Sunday, and I think that is something that Ricky Fowler fans should be excited about.
Well, it was interesting. It reminded me of the Players' Championship, obviously, in 15, when he closed with whatever it was, five birdies, and he played the last six and five under or whatever. And you saw him. It was weird, though, because, you know, he started – I mean, if you watch the front nine on Sunday, he started hitting it badly. He hit a shot on number seven, the par three, that was probably 35 yards short of the – it looked like he laid up to a par three.
Goodness.
As someone who has laid up to a par three before, I know what it looks like. I know what it feels like. And that's what it looked like he did. He just started hitting it terribly. And I think the part that's hard for me is it's not like on the back that he was just locked in, like hitting it to 6 feet and making putts. He hit putts of 45 feet, 22 feet, 16 feet, and the one on 18 was a 7-footer. So that was pretty, you know, that's a putt you should probably make if you're Ricky Fowler in that position. So I'm not trying to take away from what he did, but I also feel like, I mean, how many times are you going to make all those putts?
Right.
You know, like how likely is it that you're making a 45-footer, a 22-footer, and a 16-footer just to get yourself in position to maybe make it into a playoff? I thought what he did on the front nine was kind of disappointing, just the way he was hitting it. So you're right. It was, we start to do this thing with guys that are popular and guys we talk about a lot where we almost get too deep into it to where you're like, oh, well, the kind of the backlash to the backlash,
right,
or whatever.
Like, I'm going to be quick to defend Ricky Fowler after he does end up in the mix coming down the stretch, trying to go and win this thing, only because we've spent so much time talking about him fading on Sundays.
Yeah. So I don't want to, I mean, obviously he made the putts. I just think that not all scoring is created equally, right? Like I think that people look at putting and ball striking as equivalent, but they're not. Like you putting is to me, it's just more based on luck than ball striking is, and he didn't hit it that well. I mean, he hit it okay at times, but I thought that he had some really leaky shots on Sunday in a spot where, you know, you'd like to see somebody like him take control of the tournament. He shot a 67.
He shot a 67. So
it wasn't nothing, but I did feel like there was opportunities that he maybe didn't take advantage of.
Okay, so who gets the I don't have your grades pulled up, I apologize, but who gets the better grade, or you know, who gets the gold star between him and Brooks Koepka? Because Brooks Koepka admitted himself he didn't hit the ball very well, but he putted it really well, and he was very happy with the way that he putted at the Honda. He finishes on Sunday with a 66, his best round of a week that was, for the most part, pretty consistent from a scoring perspective. Like, between Fowler and Koepka, who are you coming away feeling like, you know, if you were coaching them both, who gets the MVP or the game ball?
I guess Koepka. I mean, I don't know. They finished with the same score. I felt more confident with Koepka's. You know, Fowler makes the triple on Thursday, and then he's making all these putts from off the green on Sunday. Like, his feels more up and down than Koepka's. Koepka's feels steadier, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know. I say that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so Koepka did not hit the ball very well. He was putting well, but he's got that confidence that I think about it as a status that you applied to Rory McIlroy years ago when we started, which is, I think with Rory, you said if he's putting, he should be able to win. Well, Brooks Koepka says himself, he said, if I'm doing one thing well, I can win any, I can be in contention and win any golf tournament. And he felt like the putter was the only thing that he was doing well this week. And the confidence that he has continued to show, at least in interviews and in commentary about his game, and he's talking about playing it forward and thinking about getting his game in shape for the Players' Championship and for Augusta. I was you know, as we mentioned at the beginning of the calendar year, I'm kind of buying up some of this Brooks Koepka stock, thinking that he might actually turn around and do this and end up as the alpha by the middle of the calendar year. So I think that in that narrative and in that arc, I think that those are exciting words to hear, and this is pretty solid and strong play as we continue to move forward in the schedule.
I feel like coming down the stretch, like I know where Brooks Koepka is hitting it, and I'm not totally sure where Fowler's going to hit it.
That's fair.
I want to frame this properly, because I think Fowler's a great player, and he's been terrific this year. Like I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what I see and what I feel when I'm watching them.
What about Ryan Palmer? Are we just gonna did Ryan Palmer 63 in tough conditions on a tough course? Did that end up just getting swallowed up because then he was later? I mean, Lucas Glover ended up being able to push it lower. Then Koepka pushed it lower. Fowler pushed it lower. And then, of course, the Mitchell report gets it done. Any takeaways for Palmer 63 early in the day?
Yeah, so Palmer 63, at the end of the season, guys that are deep in the stats game, like Justin Ray, Jake Nichols, some of those guys, they'll put out this list of best rounds of the year based on strokes gained against the rest of the field. And so you'll see like Ken Duke at the Players a couple years ago, he gained like 11 strokes on the field when he shot a 65, and the field average was like legitimately a 76.
Goodness.
I remember Sung Kang a couple years ago, he shot a 61 at Pebble on a day when the field average was like 72. I think he might have shot it at Monterey. And then, you know, you'll just Brant Snedeker at Torrey. He shot 68 and the field average was 79 or something. So you'll see these rounds and you're like, oh yeah. Like it might not be the most impressive number, but against the field average, it's astounding. And I think Palmer's round will end up on one of those lists at the end of 2019, where you look back and you're like, oh yeah, he gained 8 strokes on the field that day at Honda when it was tough conditions and nobody was really going low. I mean, his round was 3 better than everybody else in the field and 4 better than all but 2 guys. I mean, it was pretty impressive. And I don't know if it was less impressive because he did it early and not super in contention, but it was pretty cool.
We will get in. We've got some potential warring with one of the great stars of golf and some of the 5 families. We'll get into that and more right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So Justin Thomas has been an outspoken voice for the Players in golf right now. I think that some of that probably comes from his upbringing. I think some of that probably comes from his personality. And some of it comes because he has shown the success and the talent at a very young age to be well positioned to have his voice heard. People are going to ask him questions. And Justin Thomas does not seem very afraid with sharing what he thinks about anything, really. Now, what we've got is a run-up of Justin Thomas. And before the tournament, He comes out in his pre-tournament press conference, and he continues to be critical about some of the changes that have been made to the rules of golf. The rules of golf were, they've been working on these changes. We've addressed them briefly. Some of them, it's a little bit in the minutia, so I think that I'm probably more interested in the personalities and the moving pieces of this, Kyle, but now he erupts in the middle of the tournament, goes on social media. You know, he requests that the USGA starts communicating with the players better, and then someone from the USGA PR office pops off. Justin, comma, we need to talk. You've canceled every meeting we've planned with you, but we are reaching out again. We were at the first five events and tournaments last year, and your tour has had a seat at the table for 7 years. We'd love nothing more than to give you a seat. Call us.
Sounds like somebody doing a bad Dwight Schrute impression.
It is like and this was at 5:53 p.m. on Saturday, you know, sort of end of the round, and I think that there was, and the USGA director of rules has come out and offered statements, not mostly in line, maybe not as aggressive, but like, is this soft skin from the USGA? Is this just you know, playing with words, like Justin Thomas needling the USGA in a way that Phil Mickelson has done for his entire career? Or, you know, you combine it with Ricky Fowler mocking the new drop rule. Are we dealing with a certain set of changes where the backlash could be so strong that we see a reversal in the letter of the law?
By the way, first of all, Ricky Fowler, not to go back to him, but I'm going to go back to him. Average proximity to the hole on Sunday, 49 feet, 65th in the field. That's kind of what I'm referencing. Sorry, I should have looked that up earlier. But good. In terms of JT, you know, the thing that I was thinking about, Chip, as it relates to this, is this feels like, so I got some quotes I'm going to read to you here in a second, but this feels like golf's version of what we've seen in the NBA and the NFL in terms of player empowerment, right? We've seen that trend over the last 5 or 10 years. And I'm not saying whether that's good or bad. I think there's both good and bad in it. But that's sort of what it feels like is happening with all this rules stuff, is you see players suddenly noticing that because of the culture that we live in, like this celebrity culture, maybe this has always been true, but I think it's more true in 2019 than it used to be. They have a ton of power, and they have, I don't know that the balance of power has shifted away from organizations like the USGA to the players, but it might have, and I don't know if we'll ever truly be able to tell that. I just think that they view it as that it has, and maybe that's always been true. I haven't covered golf for 50 years. I don't know, but I think you're seeing that in the way that some of these guys talk, and it goes, I mean, for me, it goes back to 16 at Oakmont, Rory, you know, tagging the USGA while DJ's ball is in the air on 18 as he wins, like hopping on Twitter and just firing one off at the USGA. Like, I just think they have so much disdain for some of these organizations, and some of that's fair. Like, I think the USGA has done things that it doesn't. The USGA, I think, likes to be the star a lot of times. And I don't know that that's what's going on with some of the rules stuff here, but
has the rules change only become the new battlefield for just the ongoing war between golf stars and the United States Golf Association?
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I want to read you these quotes to kind of hone in on what I'm talking about. So Ernie Els was asked about this, this entire thing. And he said, these guys have been writing the rules. So he's talking about the USGA. These guys have been writing the rules for us for a long time, so we have to abide by it. Whenever there's change, there's going to be a difference of opinion, and the guys just have to get over it and get on with it now. These guys are a little bit more important and a little bit more powerful than the player. So he's talking about the USGA being more important, more powerful than the player. I don't believe in the warm and fuzzy relationship. They make the rules. They are the creators of the game. They should be the strong man. They shouldn't be making friends out here. We are professionals. We will come and go. We will come and go, but they have to protect the game and that entity. And so I was on golfchannel.com. Randall Mell wrote an article about kind of everything that's going on. I think what I'm getting at there, Ernie Els is an older player. He's been around for a long time. I think this is the maybe chasm that you see between younger and older players. I'm not saying all older players side with Els. You saw some quotes from Jim Furyk and Zach Johnson, who are both older, that sided with JT. But I do think that there's some of the younger players just saying, hey, like I'm more, not bigger than the USGA, not bigger than the game, but more powerful in the present moment. And they are, like, that's a true thing.
Right.
And so I don't know what the eventual outcome is. I don't know how all this plays out.
Cause they don't have any collective bargaining agreement, right? Like there's no, within the context of disputes with a Le'Veon Bell or an Antonio Brown, or someone else in the NFL, there is always the overarching concern or questions about the players versus the owners. And in the NBA, as the players are starting to realize their own agency and what they can do in terms of freedom of movement, moving around, and really all of a sudden hamstringing franchises, like that's also going to come up the next time that there's any kind of collective bargaining or labor negotiations. And there isn't any place for that in golf, is there?
Yeah, and part of me loves what the USGA is kind of doing here, because who in these guys' lives ever like claps back at them? Right.
No, I'm not
talking,
absolutely.
I'm not talking about the tweet. I'm talking about sort of everything that the USGA is about. Now, I don't know. With the rule stuff, I'm kind of like, is this really that? Like, before we hopped on here, I was in my shed trying to like mimic what it would be like to drop a ball from my knee or from like knee height. Chip, it's not that hard. Like, now, should you be allowed to drop from your shoulder or your knee? Yeah, sure. It's dumb, I guess, that you can't. But I don't understand why everybody's so, there's so much. Like, do you remember Bryson trying to drop at the Sony in Hawaii? Or maybe it was at Kapalua. It was like, be more unathletic.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? Like, just bend from your waist and drop the ball from your knee. Why is it that hard? I don't understand that. I think what you said is true. Like, this is sort of the new battlefield upon which this is playing out. It's like it's almost like the players have been given a pre-US Open battlefield upon which to take shots at the USGA.
Yep.
And has the communication between the USGA and players ever been, or at least from the time I've been covering golf, ever been good? No, not really. But I also sort of identify with what Els said of like, hey, they're in charge. They're the ones that are in charge of protecting the game. We are not bigger than the game. And I think that's pretty interesting. And I honestly think that guys like JT and Ricky would agree with that. Sort of as a baseline, but they also want, I think they just want the USGA to listen and not to feel like the USGA is out to get them, because it sort of feels like that's what it's always been about with the USGA.
How much of that is inherited from just sort of the existing relationship? Like, is it, I don't know much about the inner workings of the USGA. How much of, is that just going to be an antagonistic relationship? And does it extend to the PGA Tour? Because in the USGA tweet, he said, and your tour has had a seat at the table for 7 years. What does that mean?
That was kind of there might've been a little subtext there. It was, or a subtweet within a tweet. I don't know. I don't know what that means. I think the PGA Tour, rightfully so, loves to protect its guys, and do kind of whatever they want. I mean, and to be fair, like, it is their tour. Like, it's those guys are the stars of that tour, and they get to kind of set the ground rules or whatever. And I think that the USGA kind of thumbs their nose at that sometimes and says, look, this is like, you guys are not like golf. And the problem, I think the players view it as the USGA saying the USGA is bigger than you guys. But I think the USGA views it as golf is bigger than you guys. The history of the sport is bigger than you guys. And I think that's where a lot of this gets lost in translation, and it creates some of the controversy that you see.
Okay. I'm glad that we've talked our way through this, because it helps me realize and convey the point to anyone else who's asking, it ain't really about the specific rule changes. It's not about your caddy standing behind you. It's not about where you drop it from. It's just about power and respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And you know who I think is, and I want to be careful here in the way that I talk about this, but I think an interesting kind of juxtaposition here is Augusta National. So we talk about all the kind of power players involved. I think players look at Augusta National and they just, I don't know, they have
more of a reverence, for sure.
Yeah, and more of a respect, just because I think there's better communication there. And to be fair, like, Augusta National is not necessarily making rules. They're not, their tentacles aren't as deep into these players' lives as the USGA's are. But I think that Augusta is more in the middle. If the PGA Tour is on the extreme side of, on the player's side, and they see the USGA as being on the other end of the spectrum, Augusta National is more in the middle. I don't know where the PGA of America fits in. I think they've done a pretty good job communication wise as well, but I also think they sort of, I don't know, pander to the players a little bit more, which is fine. Like, I'm not against that. I mean, we see that in the way that PGA championships are set up, right? Like, they're easier. They're
come and get it, boys.
Yeah. Which is, that's totally fine. I'm not against that. I guess what I'm saying is, I think Augusta National does a good job of kind of staying in the middle there.
Interesting stuff. Anything else from PGA National that you want to make sure we highlight?
No, I mean, the leaderboard down the stretch was just ludicrous. I mean, I screenshotted at one point, and it was like, you couldn't pick six more random names to be tied for the lead.
Yeah, the six-way tie that included Ricky Fowler. So what was it? It was Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, Lucas Glover, Ryan Palmer,
Vijay,
and Mitchell.
K.H. Lee, or H.K., what was his name? Well, I already botched it. Let's see here. Yeah, H.K. Lee, who ended up T7. And then Wyndham Clark, poor Wyndham Clark, the last guy to tee off, is just not even in the mix. But yeah, I was just sitting in awe of what the names that were tied atop the leaderboard. It was pretty incredible.
Well, congrats to Keith. My name's not Kevin Mitchell. You started the week T102 in the FedEx Cup, and now you're top 20 after claiming a W at the Honda Classic in Palm Beach.
Gets into the Masters.
Wow. Go get it. Go and get it. All right. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back later this week so that we can take a look ahead to Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.